How's it going, everybody? Monday afternoon, post-trade deadline edition, NHL Fantasy on Ice. Pete Jensen and Rob Reese alone here with you, and Bobby Bender here as well. A big weekend, of course, around the league, guys. And late last night, Sunday nightcap, was the Taylor Hall move. That was when the report broke, and then this morning was when it officially went into the books, and I think that's the most exciting one by far. We knew it would be, right? What's your initial reaction, Robbie, if Taylor Hall going to Boston?
Well, I wouldn't say by far anymore because of the sneaky little 3:30 move there after the deadline when things trickled in between the Red Wings and the Caps. We'll get to that later. For Taylor Hall, Pete, I am excited about this. I think I'd be more excited if it were a few seasons ago and Hall still had that New Jersey Devils-esque pedigree. That said, his super low shooting percentage does give this player a major chance of bouncing back. And the part that I think is really good for him is the exposure that he's going to get to David Krejci, who, by the way, had 70-plus points a few seasons ago, and he can elevate his game to the next level too.
And we saw a really embarrassing loss on Sunday for the Boston Bruins. You have to wonder if maybe that played into their hand. And also the market for Hall was not too hot because you mentioned he hasn't been an elite producer for like about a season and a half now. So things kind of cooled off on the Hall front and just that overall allure of Taylor Hall. But I think that, like, on paper, at least, I know we said the same thing with Eichel, but this is a different situation. This is not like some flailing attempt at trying to make the playoffs that the Sabres were trying to do. This is like a team with a championship pedigree in the Boston Bruins that I think now, I mean, barring injuries, that's my only concern with the Bruins. Like, is Tuukka Rask going to be healthy? Is Grizzlick and McAvoy going to be healthy? If so, adding Taylor Hall to your second line, all of a sudden, at least on paper, I look at the second line with Krejci centering Hall and probably Craig Smith because they put the big dogs back up top. I mean, that's now turns in from a weakness to a strength. You can make the case now that at least on paper, Boston's second line can hang with any team in the league, I think.
Well, and in the division, it's very important because a lot of those teams, Pete, have really good second lines, right? Look at Washington, great second line. Look at the New York Islanders, sneaky good second line. Pittsburgh, when Malkin is healthy, great second line. So they enter that conversation now as having a legitimate second line. We've seen Boston in years past get a little bit feet wet at the deadline, 1 foot in, 1 foot out with guys like Andre Kasha coming in. You know, these secondary players that they tried to elevate on that second line, tried to have them step their game up to a new level, and it couldn't be done. Taylor Hall has the floor in fantasy to have that be an instant success, but I have more concerns about Boston than I think a lot of people do. You mentioned Grizzlick and McAvoy on the back end. Just not good enough with them out of the lineup. Dan Vladar gets shelled. Again, not good enough there. Swayman, while we like what we've seen from him, it's been three outings. So you have to keep in mind, these are going to be major storylines heading into the postseason. And if Boston, it looks like at best, they'll be able to capture the fourth spot in the division. Rangers running out of a little gas here towards the end. They could still make a late push, but I think Boston's going to have that fourth spot locked up. And they're going against the Caps, Pens, or maybe Islanders too for that top spot. I'm just not seeing this leading to any success. I look at a team like the Avalanche who went out and got Devon Taves, you know, in the offseason, second round pick for a player that's now playing 26, 27 minutes a game. They did their business the right way. The Boston Bruins keep limping into the deadline, patching a Band-Aid on it, and then hoping for the best. And I just don't think they've got what it takes.
Right. The window's definitely closing on the Bruins. I think this like opens it up a little bit more for maybe one last run here, but we've talked about it, right? There's going to be a changing in the guard most likely in net with the two top goalies being potential free agents this offseason. With Krug no longer there, it's not the same defense. They have injuries, by the way, beyond to some supplementary players on defense beyond just Grizzlick and McAvoy. So even if those two come back, it's not like you're home free on defense. It's not the same Bruins back end without Chara, without Krug, right, that we've come to know. You've even seen this year Rask's save percentage when healthy is pretty mediocre at best. So it's concerning. And even Halak has had some bad games this year. So, yeah, that's the concern of the overall championship futures of the Bruins. I do think that they could still upset whoever the top seed is in that division. I wouldn't care if it was even the Islanders, who have played the Bruins really well. Like, give them a clean slate for a 7-game series. I would probably still pick the Boston Bruins over the New York Islanders. That might just be me, but that's still my gut, especially after a big splash here at the deadline. But yeah, as far as Taylor Hall, I mean, I stashed him in one league. It's a shallow league. I'll take my chances here. I think, honestly, this is one of the best landing spots for him. Would you agree with that, Robbie? I mean, we were talking about Bruins or Islanders. I like Bruins more than Islanders. The realistic thing of him, you know, maybe going to a team out west or up north was maybe a pipe dream. So I'm happy with the fit in Boston as far as Taylor Hall's individual fantasy value. And check out our rankings. They'll be up soon. He will be back in full force in the top 100 fantasy forwards as a result of this trade.
This is the best fit for Hall. I agree with that. No question. I was thinking Florida might be sneaky good too, depending on the lineup deployment there. But I guess where I would say I'm also concerned is the Bruins tried to break up the top line, dropping Pastrnak down. He ended up having 3 even strength points in 14 games. If you listen to any of their broadcasts on Sunday night, you heard Jack Edwards complaining about that. It's not good enough. And that, to me, is a major red flag. If you can't have the top line producing, you're not going to get a win from that Boston Bruins team. So that they're stuck now with the top line together. It's going to be the big top line. Again, this is not a big problem, but that's all they can do. And then the second line, it better work out for Krejci and Hall, because that's all you got. You can't mix and match. I like some of these other moves that we'll talk about here, because you can plug and play. They're not set. Look at the Avalanche too. We'll go back to them. They can mix and match. When that top line gets a little bit cold, they can drop Landeskog down. They could drop Rantanen down. They could bump up Burakovsky. They can plug and play. I like those teams a lot more. I think coming into the season, our producer Bob had the right read on this team. They've played too much hockey. These guys are getting too old. And unless that top line is going full-fledged, you know, 100% max out every game, they're not doing a whole lot. And Taylor Hall, you know, I'd love to be juiced up about this trade, but this is not the same player we've seen. That said, it can't get any worse than his performance in Buffalo. So from a fantasy lens, I think this is going to pay dividends the next few weeks here, but I'm just not that enthused about it as I would have been a couple years ago.
Well, one last thing on Taylor Hall. I mean, he's going to be playing on power play one, I would really think, right? With Marchand, Bergeron, and Pastrnak, and then one of the other defensemen when they come back from injury. So that is a great spot as a starting point. I mean, he's going to see some goals from that, from positioning right off the bat, right? He had 2 goals on 88 shots. He had the single lowest shooting percentage. It was like 2.3 of any forward in the NHL that had more than 50 shots this season. So like, you're seeing a chance here at the bare minimum on the power play for Taylor Hall to ignite here. So I would like it at least from that standpoint. And it finally gives them a fourth forward on that first unit worth something here.
This is a Boston Bruins team that has a +5 goal differential. They've got 15 regulation wins. The New York Rangers have 16 regulation wins and a +21 goal differential. This is not the same Boston Bruins that we've got to know for the past few seasons too. So let's keep that in mind. That said, I'm with Pete. If he gets that top power play exposure, it can be no worse than it was in Buffalo. I just wouldn't go out there and expect you to see Taylor Hall light it up like when he was at the MVP candidate a few seasons ago. So, you know, we'll draw the line at that. You know, just to make a point here, I think guys like Nick Ritchie, you can drop them now. You know, Craig Smith, I would hold on to because he'll probably be on the right side of Hall and Krejci. But I think Ritchie and those kind of streamer guys that we were high on, you know, it's probably time to cut the cord and do a little bit better on the waiver wire.
And Craig Smith's kept it going. We talked about him last week extensively with Waiver Wire James, who I believe we'll have on later in the week to break down some trade stuff and, you know, hit the waiver wire as some leagues have their fantasy playoffs starting this week or next week. It's really crunch time with some of these moves. But Craig Smith, definitely, even after the dust has settled on this trade front on this Monday after the deadline, like, Craig Smith's still one of the top waiver wire ads, 10 points in his past 7 games, whether he's up top or on second line. He hasn't even had the floodgates open yet from the goals. I think 9 of those 10 points have been in assists. So it's like something I really like for the rest of the season. Craig Smith, lineup lock for sure. Now, Robbie, one team that you watch a lot, Washington Capitals, made a, I would say, a stunner. I was not expecting Anthony Mantha to get traded. The Red Wings seemed like they were kind of being quiet a little too quiet, but then of course took us by surprise. So Mantha going to the Capitals and Jacob Vrana, who could never really get on that first power play in Washington, is set for an expanded role with the Red Wings.
This is a great team, a great trade for both teams in fantasy, in real hockey. Pete, I love, love, love this move. Four keeper leagues for Jakub Vrána. He's still a player with tremendous upside. 24 goals, 25 goals in back-to-back seasons with very sheltered minutes. We're looking at sub-15. Mostly everything is coming at even strength from that player. Very impressive. So when he gets on a Detroit power play, I know that doesn't jump off the paper at you, Pete, but that's going to be big time next year. I think with a guy like Filip Zadina, Filip Ronick, Dylan Larkin, Jakub Vrána, you're really going to see, and Tyler Bertuzzi is a net front presence there too. Don't discount that. I think you're really going to see that group take the next step. So credit to Steve Yzerman for going out there and making the deal. But Mantha is a 6'5", 240-pound difference maker. 30-goal pace in back-to-back seasons, two seasons ago. I mean, Pete, that's coming on a Detroit Red Wings team that won 17 games and had 142 goals, the lowest goal, win total and goal total dating back to the 48-game season, okay? I mean, it's unfathomable how bad that team was, and the fact that he was still producing says a lot to me.
I just think with Anthony Mantha, I think back to last season, it was a clean slate. We didn't expect much out of the Red Wings, and he came out of the gate with something crazy. Like, he had a 4-goal game. He had like 7 points in his first two games, and then he kept it going for like 25 games. He was at about a point per game, and then the injury came. Then he came back. Then he got injured again, and it was like that was that. The breakout season that we were waiting to see was over. And then this year, for whatever reason, slow start again. Again, bad team, right? Like, they're coming into every year with this long-term approach, no urgency in terms of being a competitive team beyond their few decent players like Larkin and Mantha. Filip Romanek, I would say, is one of the better young defensemen in the league, even though he's on a bottom feeder every single year. But yeah, Anthony Mantha is the real deal. We've liked him for a while. We always kind of wish that he had more of a supporting cast around him, and now he certainly does, right? He's guaranteed to play, especially with how they've used TJ Oshie this year, a little bit at center, a little bit on the third line, stuff like that, to boost their depth. I mean, Anthony Mantha in the top six for the Capitals with Evgeny Kuznetsov or Nicholas Backstrom, even if he doesn't play on the first power play, sign me up for that. I think you're going to see new heights for Mantha and renewed confidence for a player that finally has like some competitive fire back after this move.
Yeah, what do you make of that down the stretch, whether he's with Backstrom or Kuznetsov? I mean, you mentioned the change of scenery. It's definitely going to benefit Vrana too. There's no doubt in my mind about that. But for Mantha going to a contender in a tough division, I mean, what are you expecting down the stretch? Because he was playing like 19, 20 minutes a game with that Red Wings team.
And he wasn't bad lately. I saw he had like 11 points in his past 16 games. So he was starting to come around a little bit. And again, and if you could be fantasy relevant, which I think he was inching back towards, he wasn't quite in our top 200 rankings prior to the trade. Now he certainly will be. He'll certainly be in that 101 to 150 range this coming week, joining one of the safest fantasy teams. I mean, even if the Caps get blown out here or there, I mean, they're still... and they have the back end isn't what it used to be. Their team save percentage is tough this year, but still that offense can hang with anybody, kind of similar to the Bruins in a way. And I love that fit. I would love if he played with Nicholas Backstrom, and then they could go back to Kuznetsov and Ovechkin and Tom Wilson. I think that's like their bread and butter line. And then if you could get an elite wing, which I think Mantha has the ceiling of being, especially with more of a supporting cast, like Mantha with Backstrom is the best case scenario, and Backstrom's point per game player like every single year. So Mantha, exciting turn of events for him. I actually just saw him out there on the wire. I was contemplating dropping somebody for him. I have Palmieri in the same league. Palmieri just scored a power play goal yesterday in the Islanders win. That was good to see. So I want to kind of keep Palmieri and add Mantha if possible. I also got Craig Smith on that team. I got Jamie Benn on that team, Kirby Doc. I'm probably going to drop like Doc or Jamie Benn. I want to hang on to some of these guys who were just moved at the deadline.
Yeah, you got to. I mean, for nothing more than the excitement too at that. Like if you watched the Islanders game last night, you saw Palmieri be a difference maker. He looks good. He looks like an instant fit for that team. So you don't want to drop a player like that. Same thing with Craig Smith now, because he's a beneficiary of Taylor Hall coming over on that line. So you don't want to make that move either. I will say though, I think Mantha probably has the highest ceiling out of anybody moved on the trade deadline for the remainder of the season. That includes Taylor Hall. The reason why I say that is I think a lot of people like to nitpick, cherry pick how bad the Detroit Red Wings were. Well, that's exactly it. They were flat out horrible. You have a player in Mantha that was season after season, dash 10, dash 15. And this is a player that was scoring at a point per game pace, as you alluded to earlier. So it's incredible what happens when a player like that can get out of that environment and into a winning culture, fits right in with the heavy top six the Caps have. I'm excited for it. I do have questions like, can he carve out a role in that top power play? It'll be interesting because I think the answer is yes, because Kuznetsov hasn't been a staple there this season. They did put Vrana there. They gave him a trial early in the year, didn't stick. TJ Oshie's a lock, I think, in the middle of the ice. Carlson's obviously a lock, Ovi's a lock, and Backstrom's a lock. So I think Kuznetsov could potentially drop out of that and have Vrana be maybe a second kind of trigger guy on the opposite side of Ovi. So that might be an interesting wrinkle to keep in mind. But regardless or not, if he gets that instant exposure on the power play, I think at even strength, you can't miss there.
And we were talking about, right, like how some of these teams that have been staples in the playoffs every year are kind of nearing the end of their window, like whether it's the Capitals or the Bruins, even the Pittsburgh Penguins. I like the move to go out and get Jeff Carter, but eventually this thing is going to come to a head. They've had a nice kind of second or third win this year, staying, you know, in the thick of the East Division, despite all their injuries and Malkin being out for a while. But eventually it's going to catch up to teams like this. And that begs the question, when we were just writing up our little fantasy spin, and everybody should go to nhl.com/fantasy and check up on all the fantasy implications of the deadline moves in our trade roundup. Like I asked you, I was like, Robbie, am I crazy for thinking that the Red Wings might have a better trajectory, not necessarily as a team, but in terms of sneaky fantasy value, like where it would be Jacob Vrana versus Anthony Mantha in a keeper league? Would you rather have Vrana? That was my hunch, and you solidified it for me.
And you mean Steve Yzerman driving the boat here, steering the ship? Yeah. You're just going to side with that until it goes off the rails. And it hasn't yet. He hasn't missed on a trade. So you give him the benefit of the doubt time and time again. But Brian McClellan, credit to him too. Just sneaky guy, moves in the weeds. You don't hear anything. And then boom, blockbuster coming in. So I would say this, in a keeper league, if you want to win this season, next season, the season after that, you're going in on Anthony Mantha. If you're in this keeper league and you're convinced about it, you're sold on staying in the league for a long time, Vrana is your guy. I really do believe the Red Wings, albeit it seems like they're a little bit all over the map right now, I think they've narrowed in on who their core group of guys needs to be, including Raymond, their draft pick last season. So I think they have a plan. It's just not going to come to fruition until maybe mid next season. Like, let's say they end the season hot type of thing, and then they go on a run after that. So I would say, yes, you know, Mantha in the immediate future, Pete, but Vrana certainly if you're in a long-term keeper league.
Yeah, maybe Mantha for the next season or two, because I'm looking now. Mantha signed with the Red Wings November 3rd, 2020 for four more seasons. And Vrana, I guess they'll have to pay after this year. He's a 2021 RFA. So clearly they'll have the room to do that. And I think the thought process with Yzerman and the Red Wings, which is really savvy. I mean, look at a player around the league, like you alluded to earlier. I mean, even strength goals past three seasons, he's tied with Brad Marchand for 13th in the whole league. If there is any single player out there that has deserved a power play one role but hasn't gotten it, it's Jacob Vrana and everybody else. There's nobody higher on that list than Jacob Vrana. So that's my, like, that's what I'm excited about. Even if the plus minus isn't pretty, if it's a keeper league, if it's a points only league, if it's a league where goals count more than assists, get on Jacob Vrana now, especially if you have some long-term runway to work with for him to realize his full potential.
What about Foligno? What about Carter? I mean, the Toronto Maple Leafs, Dubas goes out there, says he's got to do a deal. He does a deal, and I guess that's it for the Blue Jackets this year, which is not a surprise. But Foligno mm-hmm. going to the Toronto Maple Leafs, I know he's not a huge fantasy performer, but even from the perspective of what it does for the Maple Leafs in the playoffs, I like the move. I mean, I think he's a great fit for Toronto.
Yeah, I mean, I'll push back there and say he's a great fit in the locker room. He's a great fit in terms right. of the playoff difference maker, no doubt. Like if you were sold on Toronto winning a round before, I would have been surprised. Yeah. After this move, I'm sold on them getting out of the first yep. round. Like there's no questions about that. Fantasy-wise, I don't want to wait the 7-day quarantine. I can't afford mm-hmm. that right now. I am slipping. My snowball turned into an avalanche over the weekend in my fantasy league. I'm losing control. I'm in danger of missing the playoffs. So I will be passing on Nick Foligno this week, but I think there's one spot in the lineup I could see him playing in, and it's where Alex Galchenyuk is skating right now, Pete, on the second line. So I do think there's a shot that Nick Foligno can get that. He was playing, again, right up there with Mantha, 19, 20 minutes a game on his average team there in Columbus. So I could see this in deeper leagues, Bobby, and I would add him if you're in a very shallow league, absolutely, if you can afford to stash him for the playoffs. But I would think this is more of a good hockey trade by Dubas rather than like a fantasy GM type of move.
I'll let Pete spin on the fantasy stuff. But yeah, I bring it up from a flat out hockey perspective. I think it's a wonderful move for the Maple Leafs. And you're right, Rob. That's exactly where I was going. If they don't win a round this year, then I mean, come on, they are coming out of the North as far as I'm concerned. If you know, and they're certainly winning a round. So I like the move for the Maple Leafs. And I like the fact that Dubas backed up his words and went out and got someone, you know, significant to help out this team come playoff time.
They're hitting their stride this year and they're doing it now without Freddie Anderson. I think the juices that are going with this Jack Campbell thing are really reassuring about the bandwidth of the Toronto Maple Leafs to go deep in the playoffs. I think a team with, you know, Thornton and Nick Foligno and Wayne Simmonds and Jason Spezza, and then not to mention some of the best offensive players in the game, like Austin Matthews leading the league in goals pretty much this entire season, just totally full-fledged this year. It's great to see for a player that we expected that from this season and even previous seasons. But yeah, with Marner and Tavares too, and you know, the goalie depth now, they got Riddick as well. I mean, they have 3-4 good goalie options now. So even if they deal with a lot of injuries, they have Freddie, they have Campbell, they have Riddick, they have Hutchinson, right? They're solidified on their goaltending, which is nice to see. And then, I think Foligno fantasy-wise too, very underrated. It's a while ago, but he did have 170-plus point season. And even when he came back down to the 40s and 50s and even high 30s, he always gets you like 1.5 hits per game. I think his career average is like 1.4 or something. So like the combination of points and hits is very rare. And Nick Foligno checks those boxes. He has for many years. So maybe if he gets the top six placement, he could actually be, in terms of like the Yahoo season long standard categories from this point, even with the quarantine, I wouldn't be surprised if like Hall is a bust again and Palmieri's like so-so. Nick Foligno has the ceiling because of his category coverage of being like the most valuable fantasy forward from this point to the end of the season from category coverage.
Well, and category coverage is going to win you, you know, a playoff round in fantasy. It just, yeah. Foligno's in your lineup in 2 weeks from now, and he's got that extra couple hits a game, extra couple shots. That's absolutely going to put you over the top. I mean, I'd much rather if it came down to adding a guy like Nick Foligno, you know, or Jeff Carter, I'd obviously go with Foligno. There's no doubt in my mind about it. Now, if we're talking Foligno versus Gusev, that to me, I might play Gusev just for the point upside with Florida, but I think you could make a great argument against that and say go with Foligno because you're guaranteed decent ice time, great exposure to maybe Matthews or Tavares. I think he'll get a shot with Tavares personally. I think a line Foligno, Tavares, Hyman could do great things in the regular season that's left and in the postseason. I think that you can certainly make a case for the category coverage asset. Now he's clearly far removed from that 70 point season, but you know, same thing as Anthony Mantha, a pretty offensive, you know, anemic team there in Columbus. And there just wasn't a whole lot for him to get going. He wasn't the player that can put it all on his back, and he doesn't need to be with the Toronto Maple Leafs. So I do think Dubas made a really sneaky trade here. I like the ad in deeper leagues a lot. I think if you need a shot this week and a boost, I don't know if I'd add him as a stash just yet, but certainly DFS him all over this. And then if you can hang on for 7 days here, I would be too.
And Foligno is one of those guys that like personifies how the Blue Jackets have been such a tough out the past couple of years in the playoffs. If there's anybody that could like mesh with the talent that they had, even when they had Panarin and Duchesne and of course like Seth Jones and guys like that, and also mesh with Tortorella and be the captain of that team. I mean, that wealth of experience that he's going to bring to the Maple Leafs actually gets you more excited about their chances of like maybe winning the whole thing. I still think that that team has a ceiling of doing that. And maybe because they have an easier path. I mean, I wouldn't even say the Central Division is an easier path because you got to run into Carolina or Tampa. I mean, you're not going to play anybody in that caliber until the Final Four if you're the Maple Leafs. So if they get rolling here, they win their first playoff series since 2004 and then win another one after that, which is very possible in that division, then it starts getting interesting, and that could be one of those dream runs. And I actually think that he could add something to the top six that like Zach Hyman adds to the other line. So if they play Zach Hyman on one line and they play Nick Foligno on the other line, and then you keep those other guys to the more appropriate roles, like Galchenyuk, good third liner last year and through stretches this year, I think as well. And then like bottom six is where those guys belong, like Simmons and Spezza and Joe Thornton. And even if they sit a game out here or there, they're going to bring a lot to the table. But like Foligno is like a next level guy to round out their top six forward group, I would say.
Certainly. No, I like that a lot if he gets that spot, which I think he'll get a trial at, no doubt. Let's move ahead here to what the Colorado Avalanche did, getting in Devan Dubnyk. Now, this one's pretty interesting because Dubnyk's been pedestrian the past two seasons, but again, it goes back to coming from a below average team now to a contender. Like, how much does that impact a goalie? I think it's harder to gauge. I think the forwards, it's pretty clear to see it's an immediate boost, but for a goalie that has been playing well, I always have a little bit more doubts, a little bit more questions about that. I do like the appeal for Dubnyk, Pete. I think he's going to get the veteran treatment in Colorado, and they're going to give him the favorable backup starts over Johansson, who, to his credit, you know, two victories against the Ducks, looks pretty good, shook off any rust that was left over from Buffalo. But I do think Dubnyk's going to edge him out here for the remainder of the season.
Right, pretty safe to say. And again, if JoJo gets a start in the playoffs in a worst-case scenario, I think he's proven that he's a more than viable third goalie. Even if something happens with Grubauer or Dubnyk, I think like he's like 3-0-1, 9-29, one shutout. You could throw him in there for a game or two if you need to and not feel like the sky is falling, which is really all that you need for a third string goalie. But yeah, Devan Dubnyk with his pedigree in Minnesota, the parallel that I draw here is like, of course, like 3 wins in 13 starts with the Sharks and 17 games. He did have a shutout, but I mean, the defense that they're working with is nothing in the vicinity of what Minnesota was working with when this guy was a 30 plus win guy, 915, 920 save percentage every single year, automatic pretty much, prior to just last season. I mean, that was just, Dubnyk was as viable as a workhorse goalie as you would have found in the whole league. That's a similar defense that what Colorado is working with, where they allow like 25 shots on goal a game, like best in the league type stuff. So, you know, could he get you a couple of shutouts down the stretch? I think so. And I would, if you had Johansson, I would drop him for Dubnyk, because I think he might just get you like 2 shutouts the rest of the way and some wins whenever he gets spot starts. I mean, the Avs do need to sit Grubauer a little bit. They can't overwork him. So I think both of those guys will still get some work, Jonas Johansson and Devan Dubnyk down the stretch.
Yeah, if this were any other team than Colorado, I would be staying far clear of this. I just think Dubnyk, you know, turning 35 in May, you've seen what you've seen. He's clearly on the downtrend of his career. Nobody's going to deny that. But when you circle back and you look at the Colorado Avalanche, you look at their 6 defensemen, they can all skate. They can all move the puck. They're all making clean first breakout passes. Some of them are blocking shots. Their forwards can play two ways. I mean, there's really no downside to adding a guy like this for the remainder of the season in my eyes. You know, just don't look at his numbers from Minnesota the year prior, from San Jose this year. It's just not encapsulating what he's going to bring to the Colorado Avalanche. I think there's a chance that he'll play at a 920 or above just because it's the Avalanche. You really can't miss on a team like this. And I just don't think, you know, people know how good the Avs are, but they are an excellent team. There is very few of these teams that come along, you know, from different season to season. Like, this is as good as the Blackhawks were in the early 2010s. This is a powerhouse team, clearly doing everything that they needed to do prior to the deadline and over the summer, you know, to stand pat there and be the best in the division. So credit to Joe Sakic. I think this is a great move, and I think this is a really, really good pickup in fantasy if you need a third goalie. Look no further than my team. I've got Samsonov, Nedeljkovic, and Shesterkin. Dubnyk is the perfect guy to come in there and get me an occasional win.
Right, and he's like all your other goalies are younger, and he's like, even though he's a veteran, he has definite fantasy appeal the rest of the way. Like, even though you're a little disappointed by what you've seen the past 2 years from Dubnyk, you're going to see some good things here down the stretch, almost guaranteed. And like, even with that defense, like, I know like Eric Johnson, they said like might not come back. He's on long-term IR. Pavel Francouz, same thing. I think they were saying he might not come back at all this year, which is unfortunate. But I like that they not only made one move to shore up their goaltending. That wasn't really to shore it up. That was like a little flyer to see if they had to make another move. They ended up making another move anyway for Dubnyk. But like, you have two good options here, and they're better suited with having three good goalies than just two. If maybe they didn't address this position and Francouz was healthy, you know, it's just like one of those things. It's like not a blessing in disguise, but they made sure to not only strengthen it, but then put themselves over the top with some serious goalie trio depth. So yeah, good move by them. And another stealth trade by Sakic was bringing in Carl Soderberg. I really like that. That's a guy, like, if they hoist the cup at the end, he'll play a huge role on either their third or fourth line, and he's been there before. So I like that narrative for sure. I was happy to see that trade for their cup aspirations.
Agreed. Another good veteran presence in there. Now, I do want to react to Palmieri's first two games with the Islanders before we wrap up here. He played 1354 in his first game with J.G. Peugeot, 1353, and scored a goal and had two shots in the second game. So his ice time is just about 14 minutes a game, probably could go up to 15. J.G. Peugeot, Pete, I think is a really underrated player to have exposure to in fantasy at even strength. What have you seen so far from Palmieri that, you know, makes you confident you should keep this player?
Well, definitely the power play goal was solid. He brings some hits. We were talking about that too. He's another one of those guys like where the floor is very high. I think even when he was with the Devils this year, with a very weak supporting cast and not the same offensive numbers, he was still like top 200 based on category coverage alone for the Devils. So that's one thing that you're going to continue to see. And the Islanders are one of those few teams out there where if you play third line and first power play, you can get by and remain fantasy relevant. Of course, we all talk about the ceiling. We want to see him play with Barzal, but it's not quite the way that the Islanders work and not quite the way that Barry Trotz works. He'll maybe give him that role in the playoffs over time, but like, he's going to have to work for that role. He's not going to disrupt the whole lineup just to make this new guy fit in immediately. He'd rather, you know, guide him along and let him learn his system. And then come playoff time, he'll be on power play one and top line maybe, but even worst case scenario, Peugeot is one of the best third liners in the league. So I'm okay with it in that league where I have him. He's been okay so far. And as long as he gets you the power play points and the hits, you'll be just fine with Palmieri.
I'm pretty impressed by what I saw from the Islanders on Sunday night against the Rangers. Like, they were going chance to chance with that team in the third period, and give, you know, the Rangers credit too, because they came back from a 2-0 hole in the game. Islanders played a tremendous first 20 minutes, but the Rangers came back, but the Islanders stayed with them neck and neck down to OT. I thought Palmieri looked really, really solid in the game. I think that's a vote of confidence for me for the rest of the season. And I think the narrative that the Islanders are a win by committee team and you know, a four line team, I think that is starting to change a little bit. I think they're starting to get these goal scorers in there, Pete, and they're starting to play the next level. Like, a team to me that is win by committee is the Montreal Canadiens, but they're not winning anything. You know, that is a win by committee team through and through. The difference between the Islanders, Matt Barzal is a pure number one center. They've got guys on the back end that have more to give, and Pulak, who finally broke his goal drought on Sunday night with the OT winner. And then guys now like with Palmieri in the lineup that is no stranger to scoring power play goals when he had 11 in 4 of 5 seasons in a row. Like, that's ridiculous. So if he does get that opportunity, like he had the goal on Sunday night, I think you're just going to see him heat up here. And that's going to be a difference maker for the rest of the season.
No doubt. I think it's a good blend. I like the fit. It's probably, like, as much as we talk about Taylor Hall maybe being a more exciting fantasy fit, like for some of these teams, like Palmieri probably works better for what the Islanders are working with and what their end game is. I mean, it's, that would be a great series. We might see them face off in the playoffs, Boston Bruins and the New York Islanders, with these two of the top trade deadline acquisitions in Hall and Palmieri. One other team before we wrap that really caught my eye by making some underrated moves. You mentioned the Gusev signing. They also, the Florida Panthers, traded for Brandon Montour and then made another trade for Sam Bennett, right? So now they have all these top nine forwards, the top nine wings. Look at them. Huberto, Verhaeghe, Hornquist, Duclair, who's currently injured, but pretty good when healthy, and also Gusev and Vetrano. So, like, you got three really good lines there. And that's not even including Bennett, who could maybe be the 3C for that team. They kept their goalies. They have Spencer Knight waiting in the wings, but they got Bob and Drieger still. And then the defense got stronger with Montour, and we've seen Forsling hold down the fort without Ekblad. So, like, maybe the Florida Panthers are not done, and they seem to have, like, the vibe of a team that could do something special in the playoffs this year. I mean, it's just something that they've been working towards, that now with the trade deadline to be the topper, like, I just feel good about the Panthers these days.
My reaction to that is good luck with the Tampa Bay Lightning in the first round, Florida Panthers. You're finally getting to the playoffs. I know they made it last year with the bubbles. They actually have a good team, and then they're going to have to play Tampa Bay, you know, in the playoffs. And
maybe
that's
with
just
Kucherov back, right?
Yeah, that's just a
shame.
It's just ridiculous.
And Ekblad, too, goes down. So, you know, they're hurting there. But, yeah, I like the moves they made, and I like the team a lot. And I root for the Panthers because my pal Stevie Goldstein is the play-by-play guy over there, and we always root for the Panthers, and we're always sort of hoping they can make a run in South Florida, and they have a good team. They got 56 points, and then they have to play Tampa Bay in the first round if it holds up the way the standings are, and that's just a shame.
Well, I think Bill Zito's, you know, GM of the year for me right now. I mean, what he did over the summer was impressive, but now what he's doing, Pete, you mentioned it, Sam Bennett's a quality player, and so is Gusev. Gusev just needed a fresh start. He needed a different opportunity, needed to get away from Lindy Ruff. Whatever didn't work out there, didn't work out. Got to get a new start. I truly believe in that player can really respond well for the rest of the season, but Sam Bennett is a quality player as well, Pete. Fourth overall pick. He had 8 power play points, you know, a few in 2015-16 for the Flames. He just never got that quality opportunity throughout his tenure there. He was always buried on the third line, fourth line. I just don't know why he didn't get more of a shot to stick in the top six. And now Florida, look at their first line. You know, there's maybe a hole there unless Duclair. I think he's going to suit up this week, so hopefully he's back. But there could be a spot there. And then on the second line, too, could also be a spot. So, you know, at worst, they're on the third line, but that's a great third line. And I think, Bob, like the moves they made, I don't think, you know, I would pick them against Tampa Bay, but it wouldn't surprise me to see them go toe-to-toe 7 games, like make it a quality series, yeah. And then all you need is one bounce in game 7. But I just don't think they were in that position to even get there prior to what he did today.
Yeah, and it was a good call by Robbie, too, like when they were still cruising along just fine. Like now they've lost 3 in a row. They made some moves to address it, so I think they'll get back on track. But, yeah, I mean, it's tough. They're even if they play Carolina does not strike me as a team that would ever lose in the first round of the playoffs this year. I think they got bigger and better things on the horizon. Right. So it's just one of those things. It's a tough divisional spot. But yeah, Florida definitely would be one of those teams, like, you know, if you're placing a wager and you see great value and the Tampa Bay Lightning have some holes if they played against each other, you maybe throw something on the Panthers, watch that series, which could be a barn burner, really exciting, and kind of enjoy the ride and then hope for that game 7 bounce.
I just want to point this out before we wrap up. Two teams that basically did nothing, stood pat, and it goes to show you what the GMs think about these two teams. The Blues did nothing, and Arizona did nothing. And Arizona probably could have made a case. Maybe they could sell some of their players, but the GM came out and said, you know what? This team deserves a chance to fight and fight their way in. They've proved something to me. And the Blues did absolutely nothing. I thought maybe they'd try to add, but I didn't think they should based on that division. We all know whoever gets that playoff spot. I mean, against Colorado, it's an uphill battle. Just pointing it out that those two teams, Blues 44 points, Arizona 43 points, did nothing. Let's see who gets in the playoffs. And that'll be a tough go, though, in the first round, whether it's against Colorado, which it should be, or Vegas.
Well, and St. Louis has won three straight and Arizona's lost three straight. You're already seeing, you know, the true team, which is St. Louis, going to be in the playoff spot. You know, I don't think they're, you know, they're good enough. I just, from what we've seen, it would be a shock if they upset the one seed. Maybe Minnesota keeps falling here and St. Louis somehow gets a three seed, but I'm not seeing that either. And then one more team I'll throw into the mix. I think Winnipeg made a minor move today. They pretty much stood pat. You know, they're going to play the team that they have. That's one where, you know, I thought they could have just done a little bit more. They didn't need to get that much better, but that's one where I think I'm going to look back on and say Winnipeg probably should have gone a little bit harder there if they were to make a legitimate case. And then Nashville, I think we said this on the last program, you know, I think they played themselves into a tough spot this year, getting back into the mix. And if they're going to roll that team out again next year, I think you're going to see a similar result or worse.
One team I'll give a little stick tap to, Buffalo Sabres. I mean, they got as much as they could for some of those guys. They didn't completely disband their roster by doing something like silly, like trading Eichel with his values at rock bottom, or Dahlin.
Allmark. And even,
yeah, Allmark too. I mean, the fact that they kept Linus Allmark, who is their team MVP by far and away by a mile, just shows that maybe there's a glimmer for them. Like, and they're going to keep these guys too. They're going to keep Ristolainen. They're going to keep Sam Reinhart. I was saying it the other day, they're not as bad as they have been this year. They should have been better. Maybe you get the right brain trust in place, and then all of a sudden it could be a quicker rebuild than you maybe think right now, as long as all the star players are happy. But maybe even just fantasy-wise, the rest of the season, we've seen improved performance from some of these guys like Allmark, like Dahlin, even Jeff Skinner. Now that Hall isn't there, Skinner will be back, and Olofsson back in the top six. So it's like, don't sleep on them if you need streamers for fantasy. And just, I really like, if they re-sign Allmark, I think it's a really good move for them. And based on the fact that they didn't trade him, it seems like that's on the horizon for Buffalo.
Well, they essentially just said, out with, you know, the last two moves that didn't work out for the club, and we're back to where we kind of were, which as a Buffalo Sabres fan, you're probably a little bit frustrated by that, but you're not that far away from what you had last season, or even two, when Montour came over and now he's out. So I'm not too disappointed with that. I am surprised they couldn't get a first if there was a little bit of a bidding war there, but I guess that might say that Taylor Hall didn't have a whole lot of suitors. So maybe Buffalo just took what they could get. He had a no move as well. So once the play in Boston, hopefully he re-signs there and has some, you know, stable career from here on out. But, you know, certainly an exciting deadline, fellas. And I think if we didn't get to anything else today, you know, certainly send questions our way. We're happy to answer anything else you have.
Great stuff. Hit us up with your questions at NHL Fantasy on Twitter and Instagram. We'll have our rankings coming out, top 200 end of the week, but 100 forwards later today, 50 D next day, 25 goalies. So hit them up. See the new lay of the land of your fantasy rankings and make your moves as a result of what you see on there. So for Bob Bender, Rob Reese, Pete Jensen, we'll talk to you again later in the week. NHL Fantasy on Ice. Thanks for listening.